Okay, it's recording. I'm Billy. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome, everyone. Glad to have you here tonight. Just in case there's any questions about ASL and why we can't quickly replace somebody, we only use professional interpreters, and we only use professional interpreters that give us their permission to be recorded on video. So that takes a little preparation because as far as we know, there's never been a service manual study that's been put into American Sign Language. So it's really important that we have a already agreed upon person who's agreed to do it and we can record. Two quick announcements. One, just for the good of all AA. As we know, there's some trouble in the world going on right now. That's completely outside of AA, has nothing to do with AA. But there's been this text or email or Facebook thread that's going around. And I just want to tell you the result of that. As I was reading it this morning, I had that fear because the Zoom ID and password for the Ukraine meeting was sent out. And then obviously everybody sent it to everybody they know. The problem with that is that this probably, I'm guessing, I have no opinion on what's going on over there, but I'm guessing a few of those people could probably use a meeting if they were able to call in. But when hundreds or over 1,000 people from everywhere else are calling in, then I just saw the results of today's meeting. One of the usual 7 members of that group was able to get in tonight because everybody else from everywhere else is taking up that Zoom ID. So I'm not telling anyone what to do, but I am just feel strongly that those people probably really need their Zoom and whatever it is, 100 or 500 person account. You know, hopefully they can get served rather than everyone else. And I know everybody's intentions are good, but that was the outcome today. One out of their regular 7 home group members was able to get into their meeting. Second announcement I want to make is this. I was able to meet a lot of you at NARASA last weekend, which is awesome. But I just want to just say this. Tonight, we're going to make a big jump from Chapter 7 to Chapter 8, from the conference committees to really how the board, the 3 boards operate, our 3 corporations, and the General Service Office and AA Grapevine Office. And what I want to stress here is I would even discount Chapter 7, the conference committees, maybe only someone really getting into service wants to understand every nuance that we went over last week. But for the rest of you, other 142 people, from the forward to the introduction to chapters 1 to chapter 5 or chapter 6, the General Service Conference, I would hope that you are going to make yourself available, even if you think you're not able to take other people in your local geographic area through the service manual. And it doesn't have to be perfectly. These big Zoom meetings are awesome. And there's no doubt I'll probably go into a lot of detail about conference, about chapter 8. 9, 10, 11, and 12. But truthfully, the new GSR or alternate GSR or even DCM does not need to be an expert on how the boards operate. It's not bad if they know how the boards operate. But the point I'm trying to get across is that we need as many boots on the ground, even locally. I have an AA comes of age study going on locally, and it's not on Zoom, and it's not going to be on Zoom. But I just want to throw that out there, that I hope everyone can really take, if they've learned anything over the last few weeks, the next couple of weeks, and pass it on in your local area. With that being said, we are on page 49, which starts chapter 8, the General Service Board. Inside this manual are the bylaws of the General Service Board. Not everybody needs to know them either. Some of you may really want to know them, and that's great. I'm going to pick out information applying to the chapter we're talking about the General Service Board from the bylaws. But please, if you didn't read them before this week, read them when you have a chance. It says the General Service Board is the chief service arm of the conference and is essentially custodial in character, excepting for decisions upon matters of policy, finance, or AA tradition liable to seriously affect AA as a whole. The General Service Board has entire freedom of action in the routine conduct of policy and business affairs of the AA service corporations. If you read the conference charter, if you read the 12 concepts, if you put in the search bar in your electronic version, either the words routine or ordinary, you will see that those words come up all the time. But that's what the board is really charged to do. The routine and ordinary business of all three corporations. They have the mission, vision, action statement of the General Service Board. The mission is to serve the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. The vision is to provide clear and effective leadership to the fellowship. It says there they are directly responsible and responsive to the fellowship through the General Service Conference. We are concerned with all matters affecting the fellowship's primary purpose of carrying the AA message to the alcoholic, to the still suffering alcoholic. And then under action, it says, in all our deliberations and decisions, we shall be guided by and uphold the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts. And then it goes on to talk about being the principal planners and administrators right out of concept 8, serving as a custodian of the two affiliate corporations right out of concept 8, overseeing and adjusting when needed a sound, wide-reaching public relations policy right out of tradition 9, communicating with and maintaining relationships with general service structures throughout the world, providing support to help ensure the growth and welfare of the fellowship worldwide, acting as guardians of the AA steps, traditions, and concepts, which is right out of the bylaws. A couple of things I just want to say there is, the trustees have a difficult job. They have 2 million bosses. Some of those 2 million, as you know, are opinionated. And so it's a great sacrifice for anybody, alcoholic or non-alcoholic, that serves the General Service Board as a trustee. A lot of time sacrificed, a lot of time sacrificed from their family life, from their regular AA life, from just lots of things. And I don't think they're special because of that, but I always say in AA, I run into some delegates that past delegates that I probably hardly ever agree with. But the one thing I know is that that person has probably served 2 years at a time in a row, a lot of different times, and has sacrificed for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that saved my life. And so I try to keep that first and foremost in my mind regarding all trusted servants. It goes into a specific section about time considerations. The conference asks prospective candidates to carefully consider how much time they have available to serve as a trustee. quarterly board meetings in New York, week-long conference in New York, regular communication with colleagues on the board, members of the fellowship and GSO staff, participation in other matters that require attention. When asked, attending regional and local forums, serving on a corporate board as needed. And then it says there are additional responsibilities and resulting time commitments specific to non-alcoholic Class A trustees. This is discussed later in the chapter. Yeah, it's lots of time. And, you know, I'll get in when we get into the specific type of trustees. I will throw out one thing about the composition of the board. There's a nice picture on page 50. Class A, Class B, 7 and 14. But it is not entirely accurate. I guess you could say 99.9% of the time it's accurate. We have never had a Class B alcoholic chair of the General Service Board. We have had a Class B alcoholic chair of the Alcoholic Foundation, but that's long, long time ago. But the bylaws do permit a Class B to be elected as chair. If you read the bylaws carefully and you kind of separate out all the confusing legal language, you will see that there is a provision for us to have 22 trustees, because that's what would happen if an alcoholic became the chair of the General Service Board. Those 14 spots of two trustees at large, four General Service trustees, and eight regional trustees would still have to be filled. Now, could we go short a Class A? We could. But the bylaws do permit us operating at 22 should we want seven full Class A's at the time. It is impossible, just so you know, unless you are temporarily serving as the vice chair of the General Service Conference, and for some reason the chair could not make it, or the chair was sick and resigned, or for any reason couldn't serve, the vice chair, who is one of the other 20 trustees, would serve until a new chair is selected. But under normal operating times, that is a separate, distinct job, chair of the General Service Board. So in other words, if you were a General Service trustee, or if you were a regional trustee, or if you were a Class A trustee and you got elected chair, you are now the chair. Whether you are Class A or Class B, you have a 4-year term and you are the chair every year. It goes on, well, I'll just tell you, just in case you're interested history-wise, in 1966 is when we went to our current split of 1/3 Class A, 2/3 Class B, Class A being non-alcoholic, Class B being alcoholic. Some people like to use Class A for amateur and B for boozer as an easy way to remember it. In 1966 is only really when we took responsibility for AA as alcoholics, as members. Prior to that, there were more non-alcoholic trustees than there were trustees. And that was because, going back to the Alcoholic Foundation, sobriety was pretty sketchy for everybody. I know we like to talk about the first 100, and I don't like to ruin any big book thumper's night. But the first 100 is kind of like a saying. If you were to look at the people involved with writing the big book, which was published 4 years after our founding in April of 1939, quite a few of those people, including some of the stories, had a little in and out action in Alcoholics Anonymous. So the trustees were aware that they needed to conduct business. And if too many Class B trustees drank, they wouldn't have a quorum. So it was only in 1966. That was Bill W.'s plan. He had been pushing it since the late 50s. It was finally approved in 1966. On page 51, we talk about the seven Class A trustees. They are non-alcoholic friends of AA, selected primarily for their professional experience, expertise, and familiarity with AA and its program of recovery. They are a rich source of wisdom and perspective, and since they need not maintain anonymity, they are available to appear in public on behalf of AA. It says in 1951, the first year of the General Service Conference, the board existed of Class A trustee of eight Class A trustees and seven B trustees. Most lived in the New York City area. Two major changes in board composition have taken place over the year. It used to be all Class A trustees and all General Service trustees lived in driving distance to New York. General Service trustees used to be called in-town trustees, and that didn't change to the late 80s, believe it or not. But it talks about the qualifications for Class A trustee, a proven track record in their own field, a demonstrated interest in Alcoholics Anonymous, experience with working with AA and its members, leadership skills, and time to fulfill duties. So let's just go through some of them. And the one thing I want to stress, and I know sometimes us alcoholics, we kind of make Class A's like not human, like godlike. I have the greatest respect for Class A trustees, and some of them and some of the past are some of my closest friends. But they would be the first to tell you that they are as human as the alcoholic trustees and have benefited from the steps in their daily life. And I'm going to have a great past Class A trustee share here in a couple of weeks. A proven track record in their own field. So what does that mean? That means that whatever profession they're in, they've been doing it a while, and they're recognized inside their profession as a leading contributor. An example would be a warden or a probation officer or a member of the clergy or a social services worker or a doctor. I mean, I think about some of the people I've served with. I served with Judge Ivan Lamel. I can use his last name. He's a non-alcoholic. I mean, Judge Lamel is a federal judge. He's now senior status, but he's a federal judge in district court in Louisiana. I mean, a federal judge is appointed by the president and serves for life. I served, who else would I like to use as an example? I could use Dr. John from Harvard University, who has enough titles under his name from Harvard that I think he needs a second sheet of paper for whatever he writes. But his positions inside Harvard Medical School and the Harvard, I forget what it's called, the Brigham Women's Hospital. He is just a recognized expert. Dr. George Valiant. If you've never read anything by Dr. Valiant and you're an alcoholic, I would tell you to please read something by Dr. Valiant. I hope he's coming to the International Convention in Canada in 3 years. Dr. Valiant, at all the previous international conventions, if you went to the room he was speaking in, the fire marshal would be throwing people out. People would be sitting on the floor, laying on the floor, sitting in between rows of chairs. He was and is probably the world's expert on alcoholism. But in his explanation, he gets paid $300 an hour to convince people with money to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what he would tell you. he does for a living. I remember seeing a young doctor at the AA International Convention get online to ask Dr. Valiant a question from the audience. And he was talking about how hard it is to work with people like us. And I remember him asking a complicated medical question. And I remember Dr. Valiant saying, you know, I don't have that book in my office. I only have two books in my office, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, the 12 and 12. He said, but I would suggest to you that if your plan for life is to work with alcoholics, you may want to go to Al-Anon, because they will burn you out and they will wear you down and you will just, it will blow your mind as to the depths that they will hit a bottom before they think they need help. Dr. Valiant, just an amazing person. You look now, we have Nancy McCarthy serving as a Class A. You know, Nancy ran a region of the parole and probation division of the state of Missouri. You have Judge Christine Carpenter, who is a judge in another part of Missouri. We get some really incredible people. And the reason that it says a proven track record is because when they speak publicly, we need people to take them seriously. We need their words to mean something. We need other people in their field to really take what they say seriously about Alcoholics Anonymous. If you remember what the doctor's opinion, you know, it says you can count on what these people say about each other. I will tell you, serving on the board, they bring a good perspective to the board's decisions and debate and group conscience. The earliest, there were only two types of people who were pro-technology 20 years ago. Really young people in service and Class A trustees. I remember when one Class A trustee, a great woman named Corliss Burke from up in the Yukon area of Canada, I remember her saying to the board, if we don't have an online presence, we will not be relevant in the world in 20 years. Because people looking for help, we need to be where they come to look for help. I've always remembered that. I'm going to think of this other man's name. I'm going way back in time. Drives me crazy. He was a warden, a very respected warden. And I remember one time him saying one of the most impactful things about AA literature that I'd ever heard anyone say. And he said, you know, it's very interesting, he said. The literature that AA creates for professionals, the fellowship can't stand. And the literature that the fellowship creates for professionals, that creates for its members, the professionals can't stand. Thanks for somebody for giving me that name, but not that name. I know people can't help themselves, but no, not that person. That name that you just put up, I know it. People just want to, they can't help themselves, but it's not that name. That name you put up is a name I could never forget. The Class A's serve an immense, immense responsibility for us. At the National Probation and Corrections Convention, they can go and they can appear. At the National Drug Court Convention, they can go and they can appear and they can have their face shown. They can be interviewed on TV and radio. They can show their names. It's really, really incredible, the work that they do. And some would say we probably don't use them enough. The problem, you know, becomes that they're not every day in the fellowship like we are. So they might not use the same language as us all the time. But you learn that the outside world, we need to use their language when we're working in the outside world. I know some people in AA get all caught up when we want to change. I'll give you an example. We used to call inside corrections or bridging the gap pre-release. But yet the professional world went to the term re-entry. Now, it doesn't matter what our individual opinions are on pre-release versus re-entry, but the sheriffs who run the jails and the wardens who run the prisons, they think there's important meaning in those words. When inmate to inmate was rewritten, this is a little known fact, and I am not going to say what was in the old version. If you want to find one, be my guest. But there was a statement made in the old, it wasn't an inmate to inmate. It was in, what's the other corrections pamphlet? Behind the Walls. There was a statement that was considered very misogynistic. It was considered very disrespectful to females. And a couple of administrators of a couple of correctional facilities would no longer let it in. And that came to the board's attention in like the late 90s, early 2000s. And that is why it was rewritten. Because it's important that we get our message out, but we want to live in that world. We don't have to change our message, but if there's words that are bothering them, it's our Class A's that can really help us out with that. So how do you become a Class A? And I really want to stress this because I'm going to guess that out of the 168 people here, more than a few of you have ran into a person in your sobriety who would make a good Class A trustee. It could be someone that works with alcoholics, like I mentioned, in parole or probation or medicine or clergy or law. It could be someone that works as a CFO or in accounting because the treasurer of the General Service Board is always a non-alcoholic. It could be someone that maybe is very good at finance or IT, but has had a member of their family. I mean, the old treasurer of the General Service Board, David Morris, his wife, that's his connection to AA, his wife, and then his daughter. But we should always be on the lookout. And if you have somebody, what I would suggest is that you talk to your local delegate and say, hey, I think this person, because I can tell you, I've interviewed many possible Class A trustees. Even the current chair of the board, Linda Chisholm, I served with her when I was a delegate. She was a judge on the Indiana Appellate Court. She's obviously a very smart lawyer because she opened up her first law firm next to the town bar because she said that she knew that people who go into the town bar probably always need a lawyer in a small town in Indiana. But Linda was surprised when people came to her and said, hey, we'd like to send your name in to be a Class A trustee. She had no idea what they were talking about. And then one day she got a call that they'd like her to fly to New York and be interviewed. And I can tell you, everybody that I ever interviewed is like that. nobody ever tried to become a Class A trustee. Somebody in their life suggested, hey, maybe you should be a Class A trustee or at least put your name forward. So in your travels, just, you know, keep your eyes open for that. Next, we're going to get to Class B alcoholic trustees. There are 14, and there are three categories. I'm going to end with regional trustees today because there's just so much information in this. I'm going to throw up a picture. It's one that I personally like. Somebody sent it to me. I think it does a good job of pointing out. I think there's one technical mistake on it, but I'm not really too worried about that. Let me go to my iCloud drive. So there's the General Service Board, the AA World Services Board, and the AA Grapevine Board. Color-coded, Class A's, Class B's, three different types of Class B's. That's what the General Service Board looks like. I'm going to make the one correction because I love this document. I'm going to talk to the person who sent it to me because it's awesome. Regional trustees, if you're taking notes, I don't expect you to take notes, but if you are, the election of trustees is where it always becomes very complicated. Because it is very complicated. We can't help ourselves. The keep it simple slogan has never made it into AA service. You know, we're trying, but it's complicated. So let me go through the procedure before I go to regional trustees for how a Class A trustee becomes a Class A. I almost feel like, I mean, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. And if you watch Saturday morning cartoons, there was this thing called Conjunction Junction. And they had this thing called How Does a Bill Become a Law? And in very easy cartoons, bounced, you know, how does it happen? I wish we had one of those for how we elect trustees because it's complicated. But let's say your name is sent in. The trustees nominating committee looks at resumes, probably anywhere from 50 to 60 resumes. The trustees nominating committee has a rating grid. So in between board weekends, they read all 60 resumes. And then they score them based on their own personal feeling on that person, based on their resume. Then they have a conference call. And they go over all the, well, they send all their results to a staff member. The staff member tabulates the best scores to the worst scores. And these people are the elite of the elite. So it's very hard to rank them. But then the committee agrees on interviewing anywhere from 5 to 7 people. Those 5 to 7 people are contacted. They are asked to come to the January board weekend, usually, sometimes the October. We invite them to attend for the whole weekend for two reasons. Number one, we want the person who is selected to have experienced what a board weekend is like. But number two, we have 6 people who are leaders in their professions, who are friends of Alcoholics Anonymous, who we want to experience interacting with our boards and our staff members and going to our trustee committee meetings and hearing what we're up to. We want them to be ambassadors for Alcoholics Anonymous. At the board weekend, each candidate is interviewed in person by the entire trustees nominating committee, unless there is a conflict. If there is too close a friendship or family connection to anyone that is a member of the trustees nominating committee, they will recuse themselves. I know I recused myself once and other people have. Once that person is selected, they are notified after everybody goes home. Then, technically, on Monday morning at the board weekend, the board fully votes on the recommendation of the trustees nominating committee. So the trustees nominating committee, I've been chair of that committee, I say, and I did say, we recommend that Nancy McCarthy and the Honorable Christine Carpenter be put on the slate as Class A trustees. I said those very words. The General Service Board then needs to approve the recommendation of the trustees nominating committee. And then the General Service Board sends their names to the General Service Conference on what's called the slate of 21 names to be approved by the conference. That is how one is elected a regional trustee. A Class A trustee. For regional trustee, I think what I will do is I will start with the selection process, and then next week I'll start with the duties and responsibilities of a regional trustee so we can take advantage of time. There are 8 regional trustees, 1 for each region in the United States and Canada, 6 in the US, 2 in Canada. Each region is allowed 1 trustee that serves for 4 years as the regional trustee. When there is a vacancy, an announcement goes out in the fall. I believe this year the Pacific region is electing a new trustee, so I will use that as an example. Kathy F. will be rotating out. So in the fall, each area was notified that they have to come up with a candidate for regional trustee. They don't have to have a candidate, but they're entitled to one. And then at each usually area election assembly, the area gets to elect a candidate by third legacy procedure. Most times it's past delegates that stand, but there is no rule that you have to be a past delegate to be a regional trustee. I am not aware in the last 30 something years of any non-past delegate regional trustee. Once your area selects a name, that person completes a service resume and your delegate sends their name into the General Service Office and sends it in prior to January 1st. I say that because last year an area sent it in after January 1st. And their appeal was denied to have it accepted. So when it is sent in, then the secretary for the trustees nominating committee puts all those resumes together and sends them to the January meeting of the trustees nominating committee and says, these are the people who've been nominated to be a member of a regional trustee. At the conference on Wednesday afternoon, usually, there will be an election for regional trustee. So if you're taking notes, here's what gets confusing. Who gets to vote in that election? Number one, all delegates from that region. That's the first bucket of voters. Number two, an equal number or less of members of the trustees nominating committee and the conference committee on trustees. So if it's a region that doesn't have a lot of areas, then they will pick the names out of the hat of who from the trustees nominating and who from the conference committee on trustees votes. But for simplistic purposes, it's three groups of people: the area delegates from that region, the trustees nominating committee, and the conference committee on trustees. That's who votes. It is a third legacy election done by written ballot. At the start of that election procedure, each delegate is called up to the microphone from that region, and they get to have 2 minutes to say whatever they want about that person. They could read the service resume, or they could let other people read it for themselves, and they could just talk about their personal experience with that person and why they feel that person would make a good regional trustee. After each 2 minute presentation, the group of voters who are segregated from the rest of the conference members in the front left section of the conference voting area, they are allowed to ask questions of the presenter if they have any. Once every regional trustee candidate has been presented, we go to the first ballot and we go until we come to an end. Either somebody gets 2/3 or a name comes out of the hat at the fourth or the fifth ballot. That's how it goes. That's how a regional trustee is selected. There has been some talk and some agenda items sent in the last couple of years to go away from presentation by the delegate and allow the candidate to send in a video. There are arguments on both sides of that. Some people feel that there's too much either positive or negative influence of the person presenting the candidate. It could be someone that really loves you. It could be somebody that you don't get along with. Other people who are against video believe it would be too much ego and too much like a campaign. So for now, the current process, as it's always been, is in place. The current area delegate presents their area's candidate. So I think what I'll do is I am going to stop there because this chapter is so complicated, and I am going to go to questions for Class A trustees and the election procedure for regional trustees. So with regard to Class B trustees, has a non-trustee director ever been elected to be one of the 14? Is a non-trustee director eligible? That's a great question. I'm going to tell you to like wait a week, but I will just give you a little foreshadow of next week. The only people eligible to be a general service trustee, one of the four general service trustees, the only people eligible are those that have served at least 1 year as a non-trustee director. You have to have been a non-trustee director to be a general service trustee. And we'll get into why next week, but that's a great question. Regional trustees, do they go to the conference and vote? Yes, I think we talked about that a couple weeks ago. The 21 trustees all get a vote at the conference. How many years do Class B and Class A trustees serve? Class A's serve 6 years, technically 2 3-year terms, but 6 years. Class B trustees serve 4, and the chair of the General Service Board serves 4. Does each delegate get 2 minutes per candidate or 2 minutes total? Each delegate is given 2 minutes. Each delegate gets 2 minutes to present their candidate. I was looking for the letter for regional trustee, but can't find it. Question: do you need to be a past delegate to stand for regional trustee? You do not need to be a past delegate to stand for regional trustee, but the letter says you must have experience at the General Service Conference. How could you have such experience to qualify without being an area delegate? You know, that's one of those anomalies. It would be hard to have experience at the General Service Conference without having been a delegate. Are you asking me to find out how? I don't know. Does a Class A serve and 10 years later bottom out because they had a problem with alcohol and they decide they want to serve as a GSR and a DCM and a delegate and then become a Class B? I guess it's possible. But it definitely is an inconsistency for sure. Let me just make sure I give you the proper spelling. Let's see. It's Dr. George Vaillant, V-A-I-L-L-A-N-T. V-A-I-L-L-A-N-T. Served 6 years as a... Actually, he's old school. He used to be nine. Dr. Vaillant served 9 years on the General Service Board as a Class A trustee. That changed it right at the end of the 90s. Class A, why is it written said 2-3-year terms instead of just 6 years? I guess there's a couple of reasons. For bylaw purposes, actually trustees are only elected 1 year legally. So it's spiritual versus legal. The spiritual election is for 6 years. The spiritual election for an alcoholic trustee is for 4 years. The legal election per the bylaws is 3 years for a Class A and 1 year for a Class B. I guess it would give the General Service Board a way to not approve somebody if they thought there was an issue. The organizational chart I put up is not in the manual. When we make the one correction, we will put it up in our documents. I love this question for a lot of reasons. Why are there no regional trustees from Mexico? You will notice that I always say the general service structure of the United States and Canada. I never say of North America. Mexico is technically part of North America, not Central America. It's grouped in a lot, but Mexico is its own general service conference. It's one of the 63 autonomous general service structures. They have their own general service board with their own trustees. Why don't the Class A trustees get the extra person when there is a Class A chairperson? Does a delegate have to nominate a Class A trustee? No. A delegate does not have to nominate. It would be best to work through your delegate. Somebody put up, I guess a staff member could resign, but a staff member cannot be a regional trustee and a staff member. You cannot be an employee and a trustee. Why don't the Class A trustees get the extra person? I don't know. Because the alcoholic positions are so set in stone with the three different types. Let's see, what happens when a Class B trustee must step down or dies? So that would be like a 3-hour workshop on our bylaws on what happens. I'll take Class A trustee today because that's the easier answer. If a Class A trustee stepped down, let's say between May and September, there might be time to interview a bunch of people and get someone on at the next conference. If it was after like January or whatever, we would probably go 1 year with 20 trustees, which we've had 20 or 19 based on sickness and death. But if it was after December or January, we would probably wait a year before we interviewed anyone. For Class B trustees, it is now very complicated, which I will explain next week. 1 second. Any other questions on Class A's or the election procedure for Class B's? I will wait a minute.
You want to ask also, ask Amalia to ask from the Spanish-speaking community. I know you're on the English channel. You can have them raise their hand.
I think right now I'm on the original audio channel. I can go to English and ask her, or should I go in?
Yeah, okay. Stay on English, click on English, and then that way she can ask and come back to you.
Okay. Amalia, any questions on your end? Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Another question did come in. Can you speak on the voting process? It's third legacy procedure, which I will go to the... I don't even know what page they have that on in the new service manual, but I will look it up. On page 110, just so you have a reference in front of you, is a third legacy procedure. That third legacy is always two-thirds. So ballot one, you get to write your candidate's name. If no one gets two-thirds, we go to ballot two. The important thing to remember is all the names remain that are eligible. If somebody gets two-thirds, they win. If no one gets two-thirds, we go to ballot three. However, for ballot three, any candidate with less than one-third of the total votes are withdrawn. Top candidates and all runner-ups must remain. So the third ballot happens. If no one gets it, if someone gets it, they get it. If no one get it, at the fourth ballot, I messed up, sorry. After ballot two, one-fifth of the total voter withdrawn. After ballot three, one-third, if you don't have one-third. At ballot four, the chair will ask for a motion. And the motion is... to conduct a fifth. Some people always think that the motion is to go to the hat. The motion is not to go to the hat. After the fourth ballot, you automatically go to the hat, except the chair can ask for a motion for a fifth ballot, a fifth vote. That's strictly majority, by the way. If that passes, we go to the hat. If it fails, we go right away to a ballot. But if we have that fifth ballot and no one gets it, we go to the hat. Almost all at-large elections, over 50%, go to the hat. Regional, not as much. But the hat is very busy at the General Service Conference, for sure. Any other questions? I got one. Is it typical for a past trustee like Bob W. to work at GSO? do past trustees have a quote, end quote, in? So, number one, there's only one past trustee who works at the General Service Office right now, and that is Bob. All of our general managers for the last 40 years have been past trustees. Anybody can apply to be a general manager, but lately it's been all past trustees. Bob didn't have an in. Bob went through a selection process with many other past trustees. He went through an interview process. And then, just so you know, for general manager, it comes down to a vote of the General Service Board. The trustees nominating committee, which has a search committee for the GM, the search committee is made up of AAWS and General Service Board members. The search committee can give a recommendation as to who they want, but they also have to give the top two or three people to the General Service Board for them to vote on. And that's third legacy vote. Can you clarify the difference between the GSB not governing, yet planning overall policy and finance? Well, number one, their committees really plan the overall policy and finance. But the General Service Board doesn't manage the office. The AA World Services Board does. The corporate board does. The General Service Board doesn't manage the AA Grapevine. The AA Grapevine Board does. The General Service Board's custodial oversight is that they get to elect the directors on each of those boards. Let's see. So we can know a little more. How did your process go to become a trustee? Did you go to the hat? Great question. I'm a General Service Trustee, and we're not on that tonight, but General Service Trustees are selected by like Class A trustees. So number one, I was a non-trustee director. I was interviewed by the AAWS nominating committee. Four times, by the way. No, three times. Once by the Grapevine Board. My last interview, I was selected and my name went to the full AAWS board. They approved my name and sent me to the General Service Board nominating committee. They approved my name and sent me to the full General Service Board. The full General Service Board then sent my name to the conference to be on the slate. And then once the conference approved the slate, I was elected a non-trustee director. In my fourth year as a non-trustee director, there was an opening for a General Service Trustee on AAWS. I was selected by the AAWS nominating committee to be the past or current AAWS non-trustee director to be their candidate for General Service Trustee. And then I went through the same thing. So there's no hat for Class A's or General Service Trustees because it's not a vote at the conference. The boards interview those positions and recommend those names to the conference. Any other questions? Next week, we will start with duties and responsibilities of okay, one more. The slate at the conference, can individual names not be approved? That depends on who you ask. The way I read the conference charter and the way I read the concepts, the conference committee on trustees is entitled to make any recommendation they want. If they remove a name from any of the slates, it seems to me that that is their business. If the conference wants to change it or overturn it, they can. But it has happened. It happened recently with an AAWS director. It happened back in the early 90s with a Class A candidate, but the conference overruled the trustees' conference committee. So someone asked me, do you know, was Canadian Joe, and I'm not going to say his last name, D, a General Service Trustee? I won't say his last name because he's an alcoholic who's passed away. And if you're not familiar with our policy on posthumous anonymity, only the family breaks a deceased member's anonymity, not AA, not another person. So I will not break his anonymity, but I did know Joe very well. He was a general service trustee. He was a really close friend of mine. And I actually served as chair of AA World Services twice because Joe died when I was vice chair and I became chair during my last year. So he was a great servant of Alcoholics Anonymous for sure. Okay, I think that's it, Dee. We will call it a night.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody.
Please, if you have time, I know everybody's busy, but pages 53, 54, 55, 56, and 57. That's really the regional trustees, trustees at large, general service trustees, and the chair of the General Service Board, Trustee Emeriti. That's what we will go over next week. So we'll close with the responsibility statement after a moment of silence.